Christian Bexfort, Shop Hero. Fans of my former television program, Parks and Recreation, might recall this venerated woodworker from episode 9 of season 5, entitled Ron and Diane, in which Ron attends the Indiana Fine Woodworking Association Awards. Shortly before receiving the annual award for Achievement in Chair, Ron spots this personal hero of his and utters, "Mary, Mother of God, it's Christian Bexfort, modern master of the Shaker style," while giggling and brimming with childish glee. This is a prime example of Ron's life hewing quite closely to my own interests. I consider this episode to have been a great gift to me, since it allowed me to invite not only Mr. Bexfort, but also Asa Christiana, former editor of Fine Woodworking magazine. We also had my two favorite makers of hand tools, Lee Nielsen and Veritas, set up their trade show booths, rendering me and Ron a veritable kid in a candy store. My own personal history with Christian Bexfort began with an extensive tutelage at my self-imposed homeschooling, courtesy of the University of Fine Woodworking magazine. A note on woodworking publications. Fine Woodworking is the magazine that was handed to me by a contractor pal when I expressed an obsessed interest in learning to cut mortise and tenon joints, but there are other very worthwhile and enjoyable publications out there, like Popular Woodworking Magazine, Wood Magazine, Woodworker's Journal, Shop Notes Magazine, and Woodcraft Magazine, not to mention Wooden Boat, Canoe Roots Magazine, and plenty of other delicious maritime periodicals. The most prolific of all contributors to Fine Woodworking, across its 41 years of history, Mr. Bexfort has been responsible for 27 years worth of instruction of many different stripes, in 70-some articles, ranging from building full Shaker furniture pieces to excellent fundamentals and techniques, like cutting joinery and applying finish. Especially important to him are his articles about wood expansion, as he has logged over 50 years of experience in woodworking, backed up by an education in forestry and wood science. Of course, I didn't realize at first that I would come to so fully revere this fellow's massive contribution to my education. I began to catch on by noticing his name cropping up again and again as I worked my way through the archive of Fine Woodworking back issues. I was familiarizing myself with the basic hand tools like chisel, block plane, marking gauge, and card scraper, and I had grown comfortable with mortise and tenon joints and finger joints on the table saw, but I was too intimidated to attempt dovetails. The moment of epiphany occurred when I read an article with a set of plans for a Shaker blanket chest that had just appeared in the most recent issue of Fine Woodworking by Charles Durfee. The piece included some clever ways to fix dovetails that had been screwed up or poorly made. Well, this was something. I took this information as tacit permission to perfectly cock up my dovetails and then fix them. I quickly practiced on cutting a few pins and tails. I should have practiced on many more. By specifically targeting dovetail methods, a few different Bexfort articles presented themselves as I searched through my back issues of the magazine. Time after time, he would pop up with yet another reassuring feature on hand tool tricks. By this point, I began to realize that this unassuming gentleman from New Gloucester, Maine, winner of the Maine Crafts Association Master Craft Artist Award 2009, was a veritable encyclopedia of building furniture in the Shaker style, many details and techniques of which are utilized in all styles of quality handmade furniture. I sought out his books, The Shaker Legacy and With the Grain, and soaked up every other article I could find, since his instruction also appears in many other collections of furniture books. Unbeknownst to him, he had become rather a Yoda-like character in my training, and to this day I still hear his Jedi voice in my head as I begin to cut pins for a dovetail.
A little heavy to be on the safe side, always cut them. Then on it rub some graphite to get a good fit. Always slowly pare them, you must.
With apologies. Mr. Bexvoort, who goes by Chris, was drafted into servitude at age 12 by his father, a cabinet maker trained in Germany. He took 4 years of woodworking in high school and then a couple years of wood technology in college. He found this knowledge to be invaluable, as his work focuses squarely upon the natural seasonal movement of wood and the effect this has on solid wood furniture. After college, he saw a show of shaker pieces at a Washington, D.C. gallery that resonated with him enough that he returned to see the work several times. When he moved to Maine and opened up his own shop in 1985, he had stopped by the last remaining community of shakers at Sabbath Day Lake in Maine and told them he would be interested in repairing any furniture that might be in need for the cost of materials. The shakers agreed, and a relationship of sincere artistic passion was born that has yet to abate, as the shaker style became the primary focus of Chris's practice, which at the time of this writing has yielded over 800 pieces. Some of his catalog items, such as the lamps or the music stands, he says the shakers would never have made, but he has allowed the inherent functionality in their design aesthetic to positively flavor all of his shaker hybrids. In his book, The Shaker Legacy, he avers, "I not only value the shaker's considerable craftsmanship, but also respect their insistence upon utility as the first tenet of good design. With the shakers, there is no ego involved, no conscious effort to produce works of art. Austere utility is beautiful in and of itself, and often works of art are inadvertently produced." Well, I can certainly attest to this, having spent time in his shop and his showroom, where the simple honesty of his designs lends the furniture a charisma that comfortingly says heirloom. Evidence abounds that these items are handmade by a master craftsman, lending the furniture a sense of warm familiarity that had me itching to make a purchase. His signature piece, a 15-drawer chest, includes 190 individual pieces and requires nearly 300 dovetails. Another aspect of his line of goods that I find terribly charismatic is that they are all made of American cherry, top to bottom. He took me up to the loft in his shop and showed me a shipment of lumber that had just arrived. Gorgeous planks, all around 16 inches wide. In a podcast interview with Trevor Green, Chris said, "I get my cherry from Kane Hardwood in Pennsylvania. They've been in business since about 1858. They own about 130,000 acres, and everything is sustainably harvested. As someone who's been in forestry, that means a lot. It's not a cut-and-run operation. What makes cherry such a nice compromise wood is that it's got great color, it's strong enough to use for table legs and bedposts, it wears well, it colors in nicely, and lastly, it's well-behaved. It moves about 30% less than oak or maple, and that's a huge advantage when you're fitting drawers or doors." His shop is built from the ground up, like a sweet little barn out behind his house in the woods of rural Maine. There are a few places I love to hang out more than a workshop where great work is being done. You can see and feel the efficiency and economy that has developed over years of experience and trial and error. I drooled all over his classic wall cabinet containing the perfect kit of hand tools and his bench by Lee Nielsen with custom drawers beneath, and at floor level, a 2-inch pull-out step for climbing up on to gain a little extra leverage on the bench. Screwed inside the door of his tool cabinet is 12 inches of one of those planks of quilted bird's eye maple that looks like some sort of expensive marble or really intense pink maple fudge, with this idiom burned into it: "Productivity is nothing without craftsmanship. Craftsmanship is nothing without productivity. Then Chris walked me through the speed tenon technique on his saw stop, and I giggled nervously, excited to get home and try it out. Cutting your tenons by hand is a joy, and you can hear every sweet chord in the Neil Young song playing on the stereo, but sometimes, often, you have to hustle, and that's when the machines can buy some time. Bexfort spends 60 hours a week at work, but 30 of those hours are spent away from the bench. They are occupied with customer relations, writing proposals, making drawings, dealing with advertising, doing taxes and keeping the governor happy, rounding up hardware, going to the lumber yard, and any of the other miscellaneous tasks that are also billable hours, as it were. He says that if you want to make a living at it, you just have to throw yourself into the effort to get dirty and make mistakes so that you can learn how to avoid the mistakes as quickly as possible. This is such great advice, since people don't think about the business end of things when romanticizing about woodworking. It's all visions of maple shavings and linseed oil and bandsaws and beeswax. But if you want to make a living, you have to cover every aspect of the operation. This is very specifically what I admire most about this particular sliver smith. He found a niche in which he could prosper, building fine Shaker-inspired furniture pieces, combined with some writing and teaching, and with hard work and talent and a proper domestic frugality, he has seen a very dependable success rate. He keeps an old card catalog with one index card for every piece of furniture he has built. On each card is the name of the client, the date, the piece being built, and a daily tally of hours and procedures undertaken. This meticulous record allows him to compare his speed and efficiency against himself over the years, since so many of his pieces are repeatable. The furniture he produces now commands a healthy price because of the mastery he instills in each and every piece. Not only are you getting a handmade article from a renowned craftsman, but he goes so far as to hide a silver dollar in a secret compartment in every large furniture piece, coined the year of the furniture's construction. That kind of thoughtful touch makes any custom commission that much more special, and the steady stream of orders on his calendar is the result. We drove down the road to Lee Nielsen Tool Works, the hand tool mecca of American woodworking, where so many of the finest woodworking tools are made on site by honest, hardworking Americans. Chisels, planes, saws, spokeshaves, and many, many more dreamy accessories. It's the tool porn headquarters, and I was much enlarged to meet all of the redoubtable employees, including Thomas Lee Nielsen himself, whom I had only interviewed from afar for my last written effort, Gumption. They welcomed Chris Bexfort like he was a local dignitary, which I suppose he rather is. It was like visiting the Louisville Slugger plant with Sammy Sosa. Not only is Chris a great hands-on spokesperson for their line of tools, but he actually has designed an expansion washer, several router bits, and a redesigned lock chisel for the august tool fabricators. His proximity to this institution of quality, combined with his idyllic one-man shop in the woods, made Maine look pretty attractive to this denizen of Los Angeles. Probably my favorite thing among many about Chris is his matter-of-fact practicality when it comes to tool choice. One of his first articles in Fine Woodworking suggested using a belt sander to flush up your drawer fronts to the surrounding case sides, a method that is certainly practical but might be considered sacrilegious to the devotees of the jack plane. Bexfort makes no bones about using the right tool to get the job done quickly, and that is more important to a woodshop's success than any romantic vision of a quaint, unplugged woodwright's shop ever could be. He's quick to point out that it was the Shakers, after all, who invented the circular saw. The less time one spent on woodworking, the more one had for the pursuit of spiritual endeavors, by which I assume they meant drinking beer and playing euchre. Bear Mountain Boats, Ted Moores and Joan Barrett, Shop Heroes. The way to make a small fortune in the boat business is to begin with a large one. Ted Moores. I have written enough words by now about enough people whom I love and admire to tell you right here at the outset that this chapter is going to feel terrifically incomplete to me. Nonetheless, I will press on in hopes that I can succeed in doing even partial justice to these charismatic Canadians, providing you with a satisfying meal, even if the portions might seem to me more scant than ideal. It all began when I decided to build my first canoe. That magnificent periodical, Wooden Boat, informed me that the aspiring canoe builder need look no further than Ted's institutional tome, Canoe Craft. As was and is my habit, I bought the book and read it repeatedly as if I was going to be tested on it, which I suppose I was, tested by my own demanding self. It's a beautifully crafted book, loaded with clear instructions, photos, and a heaping serving of wisdom. Early on, Ted informs the supplicant that he or she need not worry about the project as a whole. One needs merely to focus upon the first step, then the second step only, and so on, until, voila, there she floats. This gentle, positive reinforcement was just the nudge I needed to say, what the hell, I'm going to take a crack at this. One thing I really enjoyed about the experience was how inclusive the book was in helping me to source blueprints, foreign materials like marine epoxy and fiberglass and brass hardware, and even the specialized cedar strips required for a canoe hull. Many of these items are available through Bear Mountain themselves, but they were also quick to point me to the builder's forum on their website, my first substantial run-in with the generous community of online assistants. This globally available FAQ support group is especially priceless, I would think, to prospective builders in places more far-flung than California, like Australia or Topeka. I contacted Bear Mountain to ask a few questions about my order and was handled very graciously by Joan Barrett herself, Ted's partner in business and in life. At this point, our relationship took a great advance forward thanks to three leaps of faith. One, because I was a woodworker with a lot of on-camera experience, Joan and Ted asked me to shoot a video of my canoe build, the point of which would be walking the viewer through the process as I experienced it myself for the first time. Joan floated this project to me about 5 minutes into our first phone conversation. This was 2007, pre-Parks and Recreation, so I was definitely unknown to her as a giggling mustache wearer. Two, my very new pal, Jimmy DiResta, not only agreed to drive me to Peterborough, Canada, to meet the couple and receive all the materials for the build, he also committed to shooting and editing the entire video, which we accomplished during those memorable salad days in Red Hook. If he had known then how slow I work, I wonder if he would still have signed on. And three, my own leap of faith was simply that this whole scheme would work out. Driving to Canada in the dead of winter, meeting an impressive couple who build canoes and sell the accoutrements necessary for canoe building, driving back, finding a shop space, actually building the damn thing whilst communicating each step clearly to an audience, then finally launching the finished bark in the East River. What could go wrong? As you may have surmised, it went pretty right. Our video turned out to be engaging and successfully educational, trademark adjectives when it comes to Jimmy DiResta videos. Joan and Ted traveled to New York for the launch. Ted told me my work was exquisite. I cried. We launched her, Huckleberry is her name, in the upper New York harbor. We didn't die or sink, and so now I get to write about it in my book. It's funny, looking back on it, I feel like we should have been nervous about any number of things, but I think we all recognized in one another that dependable attribute known simply as work ethic. They trusted me and Jimmy to simply work hard and had the feeling that I would repay their trust. I, in turn, feel so grateful for that trust that I want to continue to earn it even today. I have done my best so far in the tests set before me on their behalf, and I will always hope to please them because they are doing the right kind of work and have been doing it for a very long time. Joan and Ted first began experimenting with wood strip epoxy canoes in the early 1970s, when Ted noticed a cedar canoe for rent near their home. He proceeded to analyze the construction of said watercraft and decided he would like to try and build a better version. It would have to be argued that he did indeed revolutionize the design and construction, but the project perhaps took a little longer than he anticipated because he is still at it now, some 45 years later. Woodworkers and boat builders never seem to be able to finish tinkering with tools and techniques, likely because that itself is the most delicious part, the tinkering. We always yearn to see if we can do better next time. The key ingredient to this form of wooden boat building is, ironically, the epoxy, which impregnates fiberglass cloth both inside and outside the cedar hull. West System is the brand of epoxy that was specifically developed by the Goujon brothers to couple well with wood, and Bear Mountain Boats was in the right place at the right time to benefit from this development. Even more than their actual canoes, which were gorgeous, Ted and Joan found that people were clamoring for their instruction and knowledge of materials. Thus, a bustling mail-order business was born, which has, of course, greatly burgeoned since the advent of the internet. Ted basically runs the shop and the actual designing and building of boats, and Joan runs the office and the shipping, which she really enjoys, as she is the epitome of a people person, even though I imagine it gets to be quite a load at times. Her personal touch with all the products they send out makes dealing with them a very pleasant experience. What Ted and Joan have achieved together in their decades of collaboration is really quite monumental when you think about the numbers. Ted's book, Canoe Craft, considered the veritable Bible of cedar strip canoe building, has sold more than 300,000 copies to date, not to mention his later works, Kayak Craft and Kayaks You Can Build. Ted and Joan wield a knowledge born of experience and decades of trial and error. This, combined with their generosity of spirit, makes them a very enjoyable one-stop shop for the amateur builder. They say their success is measured by the thousands of Bear Mountain canoes and kayaks that emerge from home workshops around the world each year. On top of their canoe and kayak concern, this humble outfit has also quietly logged some other very impressive and magnanimous achievements. Bear Mountain builds all the racing canoes for the Canadian Sprint Canoe Kayak Championship, a massively popular sport north of the border. Also, they have been involved for many years in a charitable effort at an eco-friendly river resort in Belize called Cha Creek. Mick and Lucy Fleming, the pioneers behind the resort's humble beginnings in 1981, first contacted Bear Mountain because they actually just needed canoes to actually get to town. Joan and Ted flew in and were very taken with the local people and began regular visits, which included woodworking instruction and gifts of secondhand tools. With the assistance of Bear Mountain Boats, Mick Fleming was able to set up his own shop, which now houses 8 woodworkers, and build all the furniture and trim work for his and Lucy's resort. With characteristic generosity, Joan and Ted have now been traveling the woodworkers of Belize up to visit their shop in Canada, to teach them more building techniques, but also to expand their scope of the world. They also make educational DVDs for grassroots organizations in Belize on topics like organic cacao production and the preservation of endangered areas. I'm continually inspired by the personal approach that Bear Mountain Boats applies in passing along the techniques of the developed world to less affluent communities. In 2010, Ted and Joan launched Sparks, their 30-foot hybrid electric fantail launch. I have had the extreme pleasure of cruising the Trent Severn Waterway with them, including experiencing the Peterborough lift lock. And I must say that gliding silently along in a pleasure boat powered by electricity was an awfully convincing argument for avoiding the gas station. The technology for powering the boat was developed with some assistance from the National Research Council Canada, and Ted noticed something interesting about the Research Council's approach. Any part of the operation that seemed successful didn't really hold their interest. It was the failures they were after, as it then furthered the research in their experiments. Of course, Ted wanted to get things right the first time around, but the research is aided more by the deficits, because they provided more opportunities for learning. As he says, it's frustration that is actually the mother of invention. If it starts to go off the rails, we are forced to be creative and usually end up with a better solution than we started with. I have been to visit them a few times now, and I am always charmed by the resemblance of their small farm to the landscape of my own youth in Illinois. Good-hearted, hard-working folks getting together to make something positive, adding to the greater good rather than the national deficit. In 2013, my dad and I had the pleasure of attending a double celebration at Bear Mountain Boats. 40 years in business, and Ted's 70th birthday. Not only were we fed and watered like prized livestock, we had an incredibly rewarding time getting to know some of the gang surrounding this industrious pair. One such character was Rick Nash, one of the last few remaining craftspeople who know how to construct a birch bark canoe by hand, culling all the necessary parts from the woods and requiring only a crooked knife, a hatchet, and some matches. That is an education I would very much like to chase. I told Mr. Nash how much I had enjoyed John McPhee's book on the subject of the birch bark canoe, and it turned out that Rick Nash had been there with McPhee when the book was researched in the 1970s. It also didn't hurt that this conversation took place over a healthy bonfire. I really enjoy this kind of serendipity, when like-minded folks end up running into one another as though attracted by some unseen magnetic force. Ted has a great take on this and describes it thus. It is the defects in wood and in people that give them depth and make them interesting. They both take thought and patience to work with, but the rewards outweigh the effort. Let the wood or people speak. It'll tell you what it wants and what it'll let you do to it. Force it, and it breaks. Slowly steam it, and it bends. A wild grain will be ornery to work and unstable, but cut it in half and bookmatch it, and the beauty fills your senses. Straight grain is predictable and will stay where you put it. But aside from the engineering properties, there's nothing that excites. I see people this way. Might be why all the people I respect, admire, or love are beautiful people with their own kind of crazy. My two favorite things about experiencing Bear Mountain Boats are aligned with the two main buildings, the house and the shop. First, you go into the house and receive whatever cozy refreshment is appropriate to the time of day, a muffin, a coffee, a lunch, or a beer. Then Joan explains how ineffectual she is, even as you watch her handle the website and the telephone and the calendar and the shipping and several other sundry items. She'll assemble an order for a customer from the delicate and precious paper goods in the office, like the boat plans that are frameable works of art, and then head out to the boat shop to prepare a quantity of fiberglass cloth for a customer by rolling it carefully around a cardboard bolt, like fabric should be handled so it doesn't suffer any creasing. Creases in your fiberglass are nigh impossible to get rid of. When Joan takes her cargo back into the house for wrapping, I then stay in the shop for my second favorite Bear Mountain pastime, Ted's classroom. Wherever we're standing, there's something to discuss, whether it's the current canoe on the strongback, the long sawhorse-like mold, or a new jig for routing out mortises, or a hole in the exterior wall to create sufficient outfeed space for milling the extremely long hull strips, or any of the numerous specialized tools and clamps for boat building. Ted is a gifted teacher in that he loves to research the best way of doing a job and then pass along his findings to anyone willing to listen. He's like a Pied Piper of canoe building. Here's yet another example, which I find very moving. Years ago, we built a decked Rob Roy-style canoe for a wealthy client. He wanted something that was my creation that he could hang in his office. It was a piece of art, bookmatched walnut veneer decks and a lot of handmade brass hardware. I had been trying for years to build the perfect canoe, and after building this one, realized that this was so far past what a canoe should be that as a canoe, it was a failure. While Ted assumes the role of the wise man in his shop, Joan used to tell me that all I thought about was boats and sex. As you obviously know, it is patience that really brings out the true beauty in both, so they have a lot in common. Joan teaches just as profoundly by her example. She exists at the hub of a community of craftspeople and builders and suppliers, not to mention friends and family. The pair have two beautiful and successful daughters. When I asked for some reference pictures for the book, she said to me, "But I have no idea why you would want to include me in your book." Joan, if you're listening, it's because you say things like that whilst bearing a Herculean load upon your shoulders as mother, manager, secretary, navigator, and cheerleader. Just because you don't wield the chisel doesn't mean you're not fully half the operation. Joan is also the guinea pig. While Ted loves nothing more than to spend endless hours in the shop working on boats, it is Joan who loves to paddle them, particularly her kayak in the wilderness. I have been personally grateful for the opportunity afforded me by projects like this book to celebrate and promote the lifestyle of woodworking and handcrafting and making things like canoes. Moreover, I am thrilled to introduce you to folks like Joan and Ted, who have found their own quiet spot on a country road in rural Canada, where they strike it rich almost every day. Ted says that the boat business has been good to them, if you don't put accumulating wealth into the equation. As Ted says, "It may sound like cornball philosophy, but I do believe that connecting and responding to materials and tools has made my life less of a mystery and more rewarding. It has been an exercise in problem solving that relates to everything that interested me. It has been a privilege to build beautiful things the way I think best, and in a small way, make the world a better place to live."